Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number Levi, or 501, if you want to use the accurate term, for Wednesday the 13th of July 2016. My name is Martin Darlington. I am in the Qatar and in the Barcelona. I believe at the end of the line we've got Harry Lloyd.
Yes, hello. We now live in a post-500 world. We have now done 500 shows. We are now steaming towards 1,000 shows. I imagine there'll be one or two landmarks before then. But thank you to everyone for your kind comments about episode 500. It was a pleasure for all of us to put together. And here is to 500 more, as we keep saying. We had a pretty big weekend last weekend in terms of superbike racing. Obviously, MotoGP had the weekend off. But we had some excellent racing in America and in Britannia. So we will be talking about that in just a second.
Absolutely.
But first, the most important part of the show is thanking all of our wonderful listeners, donators, and subscribers. So a big thank you to our new donators. That is Joe Muller for his donation. And then also to Stephen Higgins, who said happy birthday to Motopod. And then Elmer Murakami, i.e. handmade by Elmer, the official lingerie supplier of Motopod. Thank you to both of them for their most generous donations as well. Then we also had Andrew Corse, Gary Shavitt, Bernard Summers, Martin Gurney, Daniel Brook, and Thomas Vale. Their recurring donations came in again in between the recording of these two shows. So big thank you to all of you guys and gals out there for your help in keeping the Motopod boat afloat. We've done it for 500 episodes and it's going to take a lot to stop us from doing another 500. If you would like to join that exclusive list of donators and or subscribers, then you can go to the motopodcast.com website down the left-hand page. There's some PayPal information. You can do a one-time donation or you can subscribe like Andrew, Gary, Bernard, Martin, Daniel, and or Thomas. And there are varying money amounts for all that sort of thing. So as little or as much as you can spare is hugely appreciated. And, you know, we had some pretty great interviews, I thought, during episode 500. And
definitely. The little sound bites of, this is Cameron Boubier, like, say, congratulations on your 500. You know, all those little things. They're just, they don't add anything to the content, but it felt really special. It really did. And I'd like to give a particular shout out to Gary Shavitt. Gary and I and Jules met at Valencia last year. Gary's been a long, long-term supporter of the show, a listener. He's a very entertaining guy to communicate with, be it by email or Twitter. And he and I share a passion for history podcasts as well. So, Gary, I'll be in touch with you soon because there's something coming. And also Elmer Murakami, who is the official lingerie supplier of Motopod, and the only lingerie I wear is handmade by Elmer. So you can search it out. It's very comfortable.
I think we may need to set a donation goal where maybe if someone donates a certain amount of money, then we can send out some photos of you wearing said lingerie. I'm sure that would encourage some people.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We've met, Harry. What on earth would you say that? Anyway, moving swiftly on to errata. There wasn't any errata until Harry just said that just then. So don't worry, I am not going to inflict any pictures of my 50-year-old body wearing Elmer's lingerie is magnificent. But if you do want to buy some funky Motopod lingerie for your some funky handmade by Elmer lingerie for your wife or girlfriend or anyone else, then you know where to find it.
Yes, exactly.
So. It's not been a slow news week at all in the general world. I mean, I was hearing today a political journalist bemoaning the fact that 2 years worth of news has been crammed into the last 4 weeks, certainly in Britain.
Yes, it has been a bit of a big one, but luckily we have some motorcycles to talk about.
Thank goodness. I mean, it has been a little bit quiet on the silly season and the like. So Speed Week, I believe, have decided to put some ideas out there.
Yes, exactly. Speed Week, our favourite German rumour mongers. They've obviously been breaking all sorts of stories. Some stories are somewhat true and some stories are just outright lies. But, you know, like with a shotgun, if you shoot enough times, one of those pellets is going to hit and then you're going to get treated like a god. But yes, their Superbike division at Speedweek, they have come up with some very interesting articles in the last few days, especially with Laguna Seca having been this weekend. Some of their bigger articles were that Milwaukee BMW could very well become Milwaukee Aprilia. There seems to be a rumor, according to Speedweek, as we said, that Aprilia have approached Milwaukee to run their factory effort next year. Right now, Aprilia don't really have a factory effort in World Superbike. The IOTA squad is very much a satellite thing with no factory support. When Milwaukee first announced that they were going to go over to World Superbikes, Aprilia were one of the manufacturers they were linked to before eventually settling on BMW. So it seems like that rumor could maybe play out. Also, it seems like Yamaha are maybe not super happy with the efforts of the Crescent Racing team, and that perhaps that team could come under new management next year. But Speedweek, right, in classic Speedweek style, not only have they said all this potential nonsense about teams, but they've also given us a great little summary of the World Superbike grid for 2017. Now, we obviously know that the Kawasaki squad will remain the same with Ray and Tom Sykes, very strong squad. Yep. Can't see them doing too badly next year. We know that Chaz Davies has signed for the factory Ducati team. But according to Speedweek and a couple of other people inside the paddock, his teammate could very well be Eugene Laverty. We've heard Laverty talk a lot about that he wants competitive machinery, and that Laverty was approached by the Kawasaki team but turned it down to wait to see if something was coming up in MotoGP. Then at World Ducati Week, which was also in between podcasts, I think, yep, Laverty went to Ducati management, who were there, and apparently they were talking about a deal for World Superbike. Personally, I think that the factory Ducati bike is probably the best bike that Laverty is going to be able to get. The Yamaha and World Superbike is still a bit of a question mark, and that Ducati is a proven race winner. So I think that for Laverty, that could be really good, and that he could certainly, you know, be matching Chaz Davies week in, week out, and be a bit more of a consistent threat than Davide Giuliano, yeah, is.
I was interested to see the thing that Alex Lowe's and Michael Vandermark in Yamaha. I mean, Vandermark's been Honda since I first heard of him.
Yeah, yeah. This is again classic Speedweek, where this one's a bit of an eyebrow raiser. Lowe's, I think Lowe's already has a contract in place. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, Michael Vandermark, he could do it. You know, there's some upper people within Yamaha, like Wilco Zeelenberg, who are Dutch, so that maybe helps a bit. You know, maybe lining up for a move into MotoGP after a year or two, you know, like we saw with Ben Spies, Cal Crutchlow, and those sort of guys, go up to the factory Yamaha team and jump across Tech 3. Who knows, maybe Vandermark's fed up with Honda after, you know, the bike not being super competitive. For me, the Vandermark move seems like one of the more questionable ones out of this little dance that Speedweek, yeah, have set up. So in this in the potential Milwaukee Aprilia team, which would be a factory team and therefore quite strong, we know that the Aprilia is a really good bike when it's run properly. It looks like it would probably be Josh Brooks and then Sylvain Gintoli. Gintoli not having a great time on the Yamaha, obviously had that quite bad injury at Imola and still, yeah, hasn't come back yet. So it could be them. You know, Gintoli obviously has a lot of experience with the Aprilia. He took a world championship on the bike, so he'd do quite well. And then I think Josh Brooks, you know, despite his struggles this year, I think that Brooks is quite a quick rider and could do well. And then in theory, we know that Nicky Hayden has a contract for next year, and he could very well be joined by Stefan Bradl. It does seem like Stefan Bradl is in talks with Honda for World Superbike, maybe a move back to Moto2 to replace Jonas Folger in the Dynavolt Intact GP team, or maybe a satellite two-year-old Ducati as well. Really unfortunate.
Giuliano as well. Davide Giuliano, I mean, he keeps showing promise. He doesn't quite make that final,
yeah,
push. He's not quite Danny Pedrosa level, is he? If you look at a comparison.
And the bigger problem with Davide Giuliano is that it's only been in the last two or three races that he's suddenly started regularly challenging for the podium. In the first part of the season, he was not that crash hot. So Giuliano could very well move to a second bike with the Barney team, which currently runs Xavier Forez. And Xavier Forez is in almost a factory team anyway. You know, they get the upgrades basically one race after the factory squad. So that's potentially what World Superbikes is looking for. Obviously, then in World Superbikes, you have a whole bunch of satellite teams like Pedicini, Kawasaki, and all those sort of guys who can't really seem to keep a rider for more than two rounds. So their 2017 plans are still a huge question mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it'd be interesting because World Superbike's been quite quiet. Apart from the three title contenders, Chaz Davis and the two Kawasaki riders in Sykes and Ray, there's not really been much coming out yet, has there? Whereas MotoGP's almost done. It's strange.
Yeah, but you know that's what we've seen definitely in the last few years when Superbike's gone from sort of being a level with MotoGP to now being very much a second tier series in many ways, is that everyone sorts out MotoGP, then whoever can't get in MotoGP, they then go to Superbikes, and then it all sort of starts to filter down. You know, we also haven't heard any news at all on Moto2 and Moto3, and no doubt that those grids will probably not be decided until FP1 in Qatar, because riders and sponsors love pulling out of the lightweight class.
It's a movable feast. What we have done, and this is largely drawn on the good work of David Emmett at motormatters.com, just put together a little table for MotoGP silly season, which is nearly wrapped up. There's a couple of almost certainly hasn't been announced yet, and then a couple of, don't knows. But the factory teams are all settled. We've got Movistar Yamaha, Valentino Rossi, and, of course, new rider Maverick Vinales. Repsol Honda are unchanged with Marc Marquez and Dani Pedrosa, and that's both of those teams for the next 2 years. Team Ducati, Jorge Lorenzo coming in as a new rider to the team, Andrea Dovizioso being his teammate.
Very excited.
Suzuki.
Very excited for all three of those teams. I think that's Vinales and Jorge Lorenzo cannot wait to see how they do, especially Lorenzo.
Absolutely. Yeah, X-Star Suzuki, they're going to be interesting to watch as well with two brand new riders in Andrea Iannone. We know he's quick. We also know he's a bit wild. And
Just a little bit.
Yeah, Alex Rins will be interesting to see how he adapts. Aprilia have got also two brand new riders in Aleix Espargaró and Sam Lowes. And that'll be fascinating to see. You know, Aleix is quick-ish. We know that. Sam is a bit Iannone at times. You know, he's quick. He likes to explore the boundary, should we say.
Yeah.
So we'll just see how those two get on. Another brand new team with two brand new riders, obviously, to the team. KTM with Bradley Smith and Paul Espargaró. And that wraps up the factory teams. Then we have Tectoy Yamaha. Now, we know Jonas Folger's signed, which I think has raised a few eyebrows. It's like, maybe...
Yeah, so I mean, Jonas Folger, you know, he's won, what is it, two Moto2 races, and he's crashed out of the lead in a couple of others. But since signing for this team, his best result has been seventh place.
Yeah. He's been sort of hit by the curse of the promotion, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He really has. We think it's almost a done deal that Johann Zarco will be his teammate. He's French. He is properly quick. We know that. I mean, I'll tell you what, I had a real downer on him when he was in Moto 3 and he did that stupid, or was it 125?
125s at Misano.
Stupid look over his shoulder at Misano and let
wave it to roll through,
And I just decided, okay, you're a bit dumb. Since then, I've realised, no, he isn't. He was learning. But that press conference when at Catalunya, and he, if anyone hasn't seen it, look for the. Was it the post-qualifying press conference?
Yeah, post-qualifying.
Catalunya. And you, obviously you had Lorenzo and whichever other two MotoGP riders were there. And a journalist was looking to stir up some shit, quite clearly.
Yeah.
And he was looking for it. And he said to Lorenzo, you know, you've said that you've been talking about that corner for years. Dorna say they haven't. One of you's lying which one it is. And Zarco just jumps in and says, excuse me, can I answer that? And everyone's like, yeah. He went, that's a shit question. That is a shit question. You shouldn't be asking. Why are you doing that? We lost somebody yesterday. We're all hurting. You know, and he absolutely shot the guy down in flames. And I thought, I like you.
Yeah.
I really, really was impressed by that. And you could see Lorenzo look at him going, fill your boots, son. Carry on. That's basically what I was going to say. I was going to try and be polite about it, but fuck it. You know, go for it. Anyway, moving on. LCR Honda, Cal Crutchlow remaining with them. remaining single bike team. Mark VDS, Jack Miller remaining. And it really does starting to look that Tito Rabat will be confirmed. So Johann Zarco are waiting for confirmation. May well happen at Sachsenring this weekend.
Mm.
Tito Rabat, likely to stay. Jack Miller's definitely staying. Otto Pramac, they're staying with Scott Redding and Danilo Petrucci. And I'm really glad for both those guys.
Yeah, I think both those guys definitely deserve, for Scott Redding, a second season, and Petrucci, a third or fourth season?
Yeah.
Both of those guys, now, I think they are quick. They've gotten unlucky, especially in terms of tech problems. You know, Scott Redding's had all sorts of issues, tyres, engines, all sorts. But, I think that he could be, probably not podium because there are all those factory bikes, but he could be fighting for top independent team, as the satellite teams are now called.
Definitely. And we've seen Petrucci, especially if the conditions are a little bit iffy.
Yeah.
Petrucci right up there. So I can't believe how young he is. He's only in his early 20s. He looks about 40. it's lovely seeing him up there, seeing him get somewhere where he gets interviewed, because his interviews are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Then the four remaining seats, both Ducatis, Avintia Blusens two riders, and Aspar two riders. Hector Barbera probably, he's had a long association with Avintia Blusens.
Mm-hmm.
He's done really well, and hats off to him this year. I know we all joked about Hector, Hecto Barbera. Thank you, Mick Fiakowski. This year he's done really well. Loris Baz, really unlucky with the injury. He should be back this weekend. I'd like to see Loris stay there. And then Aspar, Eugene, maybe going to, if he goes to World Superbikes, that probably leaves the door open for Yoni Hernandez to remain.
Yeah.
And Alvaro Bautista looks to be the Aprilia exile, likely to pick up that seat. You know, Bautista's quick, we know that. So
when he was on that satellite Honda, he didn't have any standout results, but he got a couple of podiums, and it was usually him, Crutchlow, and Valentino Rossi fighting for fourth when Rossi came back to Yamaha for that first year. So he's definitely not slow. It's just that he got a bit unlucky and was on some not great bikes, and then obviously on the Aprilia, you're never really going to get anywhere near the top five. A top 10 on the Aprilia is a great result. At least in its current incarnation. And then obviously with those last four bikes, the Avenger and the Aspar team, those are probably the iffiest of all the riders. So, you could see someone, as we said, like Yoni Hernandez slide in there, maybe even Stefan Bradl, as we said a bit earlier. So if there's going to be any changes, it's going to be in those four riders, I think, personally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's strange. It's feeling a little bit like, even though we've had a lot of drama this year because people moving teams, and, we've got a few guys coming up from Moto2, Zarco, Folger, Rins, Lowe's. It does feel quite static. After the drama of, oh, my God, Lorenzo's actually going to Ducati, this is going to throw everything open, and, Vinales is coming across to Yamaha. There's not actually a huge amount of change.
Maybe, so, but, there's never really any change. For me, this is probably the biggest change since 2010. Was it 2010 when Stoner went to Honda and Rossi went to Ducati? That was 2010, right? 2010. Yeah, because...
No, 2011.
Oh, yeah, end of 2010, start of 2011.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so, this is, personally, I think this is the biggest change we've seen in the grid, certainly in terms of factory rides, probably not in terms of satellite rides, but in terms of factory rides, this is the biggest change we've seen in, what's that now, 6 years or 5 years, five, 6 years. I think it's going to be good. And, just based on those things, I'm just so excited to see Jorge Lorenzo on that Ducati. The Ducati is clearly not a slow bike. It maybe has some problems, but unfortunately with riders like Dovizioso and Iannone, no offense to them, but they're both good riders, but they're not great riders. Iannone is a great rider for a couple of laps before he crashes into someone, but,
Yeah. I mean, Dovi's won one race in, 8 years?
Yes.
In the wet at Donington. I was there, actually.
That was when Stoner and Hayden fitted wet tires when it was still dry, wasn't it? And then they potted about.
And by the time it rained, they destroyed theirs. Rossi crashed and then remounted.
Yeah.
James Toseland prevented him from getting you know, his best ever finish, because he nearly got a fifth, but Rossi pipped him to it. Lorenzo crashed, and it's the first time I saw an air suit deploy and looked like, you know, bloody some kind of superhero as he walked off with his puffed up soldiers shoulders. And Dovi kind of inherited it, but, you know, he stayed upright. Same as Jasper.
Yeah.
You can't take anything away. The skill required to ride at the front in those conditions is phenomenal. So,
exactly.
But yeah, I get exactly what you mean about Iannone and Dovizioso. Lorenzo will be able to give them, I mean, if there's one thing that boy is, it's consistent.
Yeah.
Really trying hard not to use the Nick Harris metronomic word, but he is consistent, and at least they'll know, because I'd imagine Iannone's a bit like, I remember Stoner slagging off Randy Depunier after the Qatar test, and when he was struggling on the Ducati, so he was back with some of the faster satellite riders, and he said, you know, it's really dangerous because every time we go around a corner, we're all on the same bit of tarmac, except RDP is not only on a different bit of tarmac, he's at a different angle every time he goes around that corner, every lap. And he's thinking, yeah, okay. Or is it Melandri? It's one of those he was given a bit of a hammering to.
But it was probably Depunier. Stoner and Depunier never really saw eye to eye.
No. It's probably because Depunier bagged an Aussie girl, and, you know, Stoner's like, hey, they're meant to be for us, you bastard.
It should be really good in 2017. You know, hugely excited. I think that Ducati could possibly win a race before Lorenzo joins. I think that Jorge Lorenzo will certainly win a race with Ducati next year. I'm willing to put some form of bet out now. Motopod at motopodcast.com. If any listeners out there want to bet me something, I think that Jorge Lorenzo will take at least one race win next year. I think that if Ducati are going to win a race this year, it will be in Austria, because that circuit only has 9 corners and is basically just a bunch of straight lines connected by those 9 corners. So there are only 9 chances a lap for Andrea Iannone to crash into someone. And I think that Iannone is just crazy enough to win a race on that Ducati in its current form.
You know, when you said that then, I remember in the winter 2003-2004 saying to mates, No, don't underestimate Rossi. By the end of next year, I reckon he'll be on the podium, if not winning a race. And then, of course, he won the first race out and won the championship. And I looked complete. Yeah, I kind of underestimated to overachieve, but no, not really. So, yeah, you never know. I've got the Jelly Baby bet on. Bag of Jelly Babies, yeah, to the winner. I've said Vinales will finish next season ahead of Valentino Rossi in the table, so we'll see how that goes. Interesting, the next piece of news you've written there.
Yes, this news broke just a couple of hours before we recorded. The Circuit of Wales, they've had a long history of trying to get funding, getting funding, not getting funding. There was a bit of a scandal earlier this week when it seemed like the head of the circuit had charged his gardening bill to the circuit or something like that. But the Circuit of Wales, they had gone to the Welsh government for a second time to try and get the government to underwrite the costs of building the Circuit of Wales. Originally, they'd gone asking for the government to underwrite 100% of the costs. Then this second time, they came back and they said, OK, can you underwrite 75% of the costs? And the Welsh government said no. So now the Circuit of Wales needs to go and try and find someone within the private sector to underwrite the project.
Well, that's not... I was going to say, I'm actually reading, I've got in front of me the BBC article.
Yeah.
Saying further work is needed before the Welsh government is happy to underwrite it. They said in a period of significant economic uncertainty due to Brexit, it couldn't back the plans at 100%. The risk to the taxpayer was unacceptable.
Yeah.
However, they're looking at a 50-50 deal. So guarantees, and there are also two local councils, Ebervale and the adjoining council, who are going to benefit most in terms of local unemployment and the like, that they're going to come in and support in some way. So they do need more from the private sector. But they do seem to be confident. But you don't know how much of it's PR.
In theory, we're meant to be in our third year of racing at the Circuit of Wales, and they haven't even started building the circuit. It just seems like there's you know, constant delays, and then there was a whole faff with, oh no, we'll race at Donington this year, oh no, we don't have enough money to make Donington safe, okay, back to Silverstone, everyone. I don't know, it just seems like there's just so many hurdles in the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a damn shame, because that area is you know, really, really depressed area with the traditional industries have been ripped out over the last 20 years. They could really do with it, and it does sound like it would be a fantastic race circuit from a purely racing point of view. I mean, TVR have been bought back from the Russians by some British enthusiasts, the sports car manufacturer, and they've been looking to go down and set up their factory there. You know, there's so many FTR people waiting to go. FTR, yeah, they've already bought them, the chassis manufacturer that we used to see in Moto2. I'm not giving up hope, but obviously people have to sound confident, so you're never quite sure if they really are or they're just saying it because that's what expected. So, anyway. Before your internet decides to take a running jump out the window and go down the Ramblers and have its pocket picked, we should probably talk a bit about Laguna Seca.
Yes, we were at Laguna Seca we weren't, but the World Superbike paddock was at Laguna Seca. Every time any racing goes to Laguna Seca, I get reminded of how fantastic a track it seems. I am so upset that I have yet to be to Laguna Seca. You know, is the racing always super exciting there? Not always, but turn one and the corkscrew. Those corners are absolutely mental. You know, they say that the TV flattens a racetrack a lot.
I mean, Jules has said to me, you have to come and see it. How steep that is. He said, if you wanted to walk up it, you're almost putting your hands down in front of you and walking on all fours. It's that steep. He said, it just is incredible to stand there. And he said, and photographs and film just do not do it justice. It was funny, actually. Tom Gaymore, is it, and Steve Parrish were almost sort of giggling at, well, MotoGP don't come here because they're too expensive and they can't afford it.
That's so not we really the it. Reason. Like,
no. I think it's got far more to do with other political factors. But, you know, it's a fantastic circuit for, like you say, it's a bit like Formula One going to Monaco. Now, I don't watch Formula One anymore, but everyone's like, why? It's shit. There's no overtaking, all that sort of thing. But the drivers love it. It's historic and it's different and it's unique. And I think Laguna, it looks rough and ready. It looks like Donington used to be. You know, the tarmac, fantastic. Everything else, shit. At least at Laguna, they get really good paddock access. But so World Superbikes were there, and AMA supported. We'll come into the AMA a little bit later. In Super Bowl 1, Leon Camus led the way. Michael van der Mark, surprisingly, having to go to Super Bowl 1. He did seem to struggle this weekend.
Yeah, both of the Honda riders didn't really have the best weekend. It seems like Honda are still trying to sort out one or two gremlins in the CBR like they have been for basically all eternity. But Michael van der Mark especially had a tough time.
I was going to say, Nicky didn't do too bad. I mean, obviously, he's got huge experience of that track. There's the added emotional incentive, the fact that it's the home circuit. And he actually did, as we'll come on to shortly, get a podium, as in a proper, you know, podium you can see on telly, not a Harry Motorpod podium, because he turned up. So we went to Super Bowl 2, and the two guys from Super Bowl 1, we just reversed order and finished at the bottom, Michael van der Mark and Leon Camus, but Tom Sykes got pole. And this was strange, because this last year, Chaz Davis, I think he did the clean sweep, didn't he?
Yeah,
his fastest lap and two race wins.
He certainly did the double at Laguna Seca. I'd have to go back and check, but he definitely did the double.
Yeah, and this was Sykes, Ray, Giuliano, and then Chaz Davis. I mean, that's all of them within half a second of each other.
Yeah.
Xavier Forres, really, really doing well, this lad. Nicky Hayden, Yordi Torres, still, that BMW still not quite, even with Torres on board, who's a proper quick rider, it's still not quite there, is it? Savadori with the Aprilia was eighth, Canepa, Alex Lowes, and then van der Mark and Camus. That was the first four rows. And then we have race one, and it was all right at first. It was okay.
It was a decent little race. You know, you could definitely see that it was the usual front runners, right? It was the Kawasaki's and the factory Ducatis at the front. Yeah. Chaz Davies was doing really well for the first four laps,
But as Steve Parish noticed, he said you can see he's normally pretty smooth. He backs it in, sure, but he's normally pretty smooth, and it looked like he was overriding.
Yeah, certainly. It seems like in the last two or three rounds, even before Laguna Seca, that Chaz has had to override that Ducati. And for me, that's the real difference between the Ducati and the Kawasaki, is that when the Ducati works, it works really, really well. But when it doesn't work, yeah, Chaz has to push beyond the limit, and then that's when we see what happened in race one, where he crashes out of the lead. Whereas the Kawasaki, it just sort of works pretty well in all conditions. And then when Sykes or Ray gets it really, really good, then they're unstoppable.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had we had Tom Sykes leading, then Johnny Ray took the lead, then Tom Sykes took it back. But then at the end, Johnny Ray just seemed to sort of, it's like he, I don't know, hit the nitrous oxide injectors or found another gear, and just it was almost like I've just been sat here, you know, at 85%, kind of push it to 90 now. Oh, Tom's at 100. And he had no answer. I mean, okay, he was less than a second that he came in by. Chaz fell off.
Giuliano fell off.
Four laps in the end, yeah. Giuliano fell off. We lost quite a few.
Yeah.
And Nicky Hayden came in third. Really, I mean, Steve Parish was quite funny, actually. His commentary was quite good this weekend. And he said, Marco van der Mark is lining up to have a go at his teammate. He said, he won't get out of here alive if he takes a podium for Nicky Hayden. You know, Alex Lowe's a very credible fifth. Savadori was sixth. Forres, seventh. Torres, eighth. De Angelis, ninth. Canepa, tenth. Leon Camier. Westy was 12th. Josh Brooks, still struggling like BMW, was 13th. Teammate Carol Abraham, 14th. And Ramos was 15th. Yeah. Was the last point. Four DNFs in total for five. Vitiello was not classified. Don't know what that did he?
I think he had a problem on the grid, so had to pull off. He didn't get to start one of the races, I think. But race one was pretty good, and it was great to see Nicky Hayden on the podium. In terms of the overall appeal of World Superbikes in the US, I think that obviously winning the race would have been the best case scenario for Hayden, but him getting on the podium, I think, should hopefully help World Superbike in the US and help World Superbike in general. Anecdotal examples, it seems like lots of you guys out there in Motopod land were going to tune in more to World Superbikes just because of Hayden. So hopefully Hayden doing well will encourage more and more people to watch World Superbikes, because the racing this year has been good. You know, we've given World Superbikes a pretty hard time in the past for being absolutely dog shit boring, but it's getting better. You know, I think that the new race format's pretty interesting. It makes it a bit easier to watch it, especially when there's also British Superbikes on. You know, you can sort of spread out your weekend a bit more and get to see the sun at least once. So I think that World Superbike is heading in the right direction.
I think one of the problems is it's quite friendly. I never ever thought I'd say this, but I miss Max Biaggi.
Yeah, certainly. You know, Max Biaggi and Marco Melandri, was it Donington, right, where Biaggi came up and just slapped Marco Melandri in the face? What an excellent moment that was.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you know, we've said
And Troy Bayliss, and I mean, Norrie Hager, the nearly man so many times, but such an entertaining guy just to watch slide in the front. Crazy.
Yeah, no, it does need that sort of that wild star factor, I think. You know, we've mentioned it a lot that it says a lot about your series when Tom Sykes is your villain in the series, because Tom Sykes is, you know, he's just a bit grumpy sometimes.
He's a pretty nice guy, really.
Yeah. But then we moved on to race two. There was a bit of drama in race two quite close to the start, as Pavel Skopeck, the Polish rider, he had quite a big crash and brought out the red flag. Interestingly enough, Pavel Skopeck and the Team Toth team were using telemetry for the first time this weekend.
Yeah.
So that says a lot about that level of the team, because telemetry basically just requires you to plug in a laptop.
Yeah. Whoops. So, yeah, and we had we'd already lost Leon Cammy, Josh Brooks, and Alex DeAngelis, and we didn't get them back. They were all three of them were unable to restart.
Yep, Cammy and DeAngelis were technical faults, and I think Brooks Brooks crashed of his own accord.
I saw the interview with Leon Cammy, and he just said he said that there was something definitely not right. So he pulled in. He said, "I don't think we're going to get it fixed." So there was a restart with the grid bait, and I felt a bit sorry for Davide Giuliano because he had looked proper. It was half a second clear after four laps, but he just looked absolutely on it. And of course, when they restarted, as so often happens, he got mugged. Tom Sykes got past him, and he got pushed back. Johnny Ray was in amongst him, and then Johnny Ray started riding really strangely. He just ran wide, three, four times, and eventually dropped down to about, I think it was about 11th, 10th or 11th.
But that was after he made an absolutely incredible double overtake at the corkscrew, which may or may not have been intentional, because after the second race, he revealed he had been having some problems with his gearbox. So not sure if the corkscrew move was 100% deliberate, but it was absolutely fantastic. That's up on the World Superbike Facebook page, I believe, if you haven't seen that one. So be sure to go check out that video clip, because it's a pretty brave move.
But he dropped right back, rejoined, and then the camera shot to him, I don't know, half a lap later, and he pulled off. And he was kneeling beside the bike looking at it, and clearly something was wrong. The last I read, Johnny had said, not exactly sure what it was, but we're looking at it, and it's definitely something mechanical, which I thought interesting. He said mechanical, not electrical. So,
that's something
pretty nice. Ready for further news. We probably won't hear anything.
No, almost certainly not. But, you know, usually riders blame electronics. So at least you said it was something other than electronics. But with Ray out of the race, that pretty much left Tom Sykes to his own devices. Davide Giuliano, who was pretty close to him, and it looked like Giuliano would, you know, have a bit of a last lap lunge, but never really got close enough to Tom Sykes to do anything about it, unfortunately.
No, I just found that a bit disappointing. It was like, okay, is he setting him up? And we don't know. Maybe Davide Giuliano was running at, 100% all the way just to stay within a quarter of a second. But he was there, and you were just waiting for the moment where he was strong on the circuit. Maybe that was at corners, so it's really difficult to overtake. Chaz sort of came up to them, dropped back a bit, No, and those three were over 10 seconds clear from Xavier Forres. So, yeah, it's a bit disappointing that there wasn't a climax to the race. But, there we are. It was Sykes, Giuliano, Davis, Forres, Hayden, Torres, Vandermark, Canepa, West, Ramos, De Rosa, Abraham, Schmitter, Alex Lowe's disappointing in 14th. And I do have to say, Saeed Al-Salehti, QMMF rider. Well, he's Perticini Racing, but he's sponsored by QMMF. Qatari got his first point.
And the first ever point scored by a Qatari rider in World Superbikes. So a bit of a big honour for him. Also, I found out he used to be in the Qatari Special Forces.
Mm-hmm.
So that dude is probably not a dude that you want to mess with.
And a couple of the guys on the compound who go up to Lasar quite frequently doing track days and competing in the Expat Cup, as a lot of people refer to it, they know him quite well. He's an absolutely lovely guy. And he's an absolute total petrol head. Just loves his bikes. And we're hoping maybe to have a chat with him in the off season.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. You know, I'm sure that he'd love the press. But, also guys like that, it's for me, it's guys like him who are really interesting to talk to, because I'm sure that he's under no illusions that he's never going to win a World Superbike race. But, he still has the motivation to go line up there every week, or not every weekend, but how many rounds World Superbikes now has, about three, I think. He still has the motivation. And I'm sure that scoring that point for him probably was like a victory. So hopefully you do get that.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's his podium. I mean, I absolutely loved the interview I did with Jenny Timmons in her workshop as they're preparing an Africa twin that some customer was about to go off and ride around Africa, funny enough, an Africa twin. And she's doing welding, and her partner in the business in Ellesmere Port, where they got their bike shop, is a crew chief at the weekends, you know. And as we'll get on to later, Jenny's quite glad that she's still walking after the crash she had. But we'll come out. So Johnny Ray sees his lead shrunk, but still significant at 46 points. Johnny's on 368. Tom Sykes on 322.
Yeah.
Chaz, another 62 points behind Tom. 108 behind Johnny Ray.
It's game over. It's game over.
He needs both of them. Basically, he needs Kawasaki to withdraw engines.
Yeah.
And make the pedal round. He's on 260 points. You know, he's 108 points behind Johnny Ray. Davide Giuliano is a further 75 points behind Chaz. And equal on points with Michael Vandermark. So that'd be an interesting little battle. And Nicky Hayden.
Yeah, Nicky Hayden, he's not too far off Vandermark either. He's 12 points back on Giuliano and Vandermark. Yeah. And Torres is 18 points behind Hayden. So, you know, that battle for fourth could be interesting. But, you know, after that, then you get Leon Camier in eighth. That's pretty good. Lorenzo Salvadori, ninth. Xavier Flores in 10th. Alex Lowe's 11th. And then so on and so forth. But for me, it's really clear that Ray, Sykes and Davies are the class of the field. You know, even Davies is 75 points ahead of Giuliano. Those two guys on another level.
I'm still gutted that Josh Brooks no one managed to find him a Yamaha ride.
Yeah.
After he just bonded with that bike last year. I know it's BSB and it's slightly different spec and it's different circuits. He was just so good. And to see him there, he's equal on points with Sylvain Guintoli, who hasn't competed in the last 10 races. The last five rounds, he's been injured. He's been out.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, I wonder how injured Guintoli is. Either the injury is a lot worse than we were originally told, or Guintoli is deliberately in no rush to get back on that motorcycle because he knows something we don't.
Yeah, possible.
Because for me, I know that Guintoli is definitely an elder statesman in terms of motorcycle racing. But you see everyone else do everything they can to be back on a motorcycle as soon as possible. I mean, Jorge Navarro is going to be back on his Moto3 bike this weekend in Germany.
But you're kidding.
Nope, I'm 100% serious.
Jeez, now that's interesting because watching the coverage last time and Julian Ryder was talking with Neil Hodgson, I think. And I think Colin Edwards, and they were saying, he's a young kid. He's going to win races. The title's almost certainly gone away from him. Just make sure you're fixed before you come back. Okay.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with Hodgson and Colin Edwards on that one because, yeah, to me as well, it seems ridiculous that Jorge Navarro is going to rush back to limp around, pardon the pun, to limp around in, you know, probably outside the points and basically just be a risk to his own health. It seems ridiculous for him to do that. Yeah. But anyway, that's World Superbikes. You know, it's a matter of when Jonathan Ray takes that second title. He already has the record for the most consecutive races as the leader of the championship. So, you know, he's probably going to set a fair few more records. A couple of those guys like Brooks and Vandermark and Lowe's are off to the Suzuka 8-hour. Alex Lowe's just concluded the test day today at the Suzuka 8-hour as the fastest rider. He'll be joined by Paul Espargaro and Katsuki Nakasuga in the factory Yamaha team for the Suzuka 8-hour. So I could very easily see Lowe's winning that race. But then on to BSB, as we said, it was finally dry for BSB Superpole. So we got to listen to all of the BSB riders' honestly dreadful Superpole songs. You can go to the MCE BSB Twitter page and look at all on their YouTube page. They actually have all of the songs. And yeah, I'm sorry, but some of those riders have really awful taste in music. There wasn't even one AC/DC song.
Oh, that's bad. How can you not have Highway to Hell?
Exactly. Brock Parks had, Men at Work? I Come from the Land Down Under? That's by Men at Work, right? No. Or is that?
Yeah. Men at Work, yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
So yeah, just some really awful songs. But the new Superpole, or the air quotes, new Superpole format, it's obviously very similar to the old Superpole format. It was quite exciting to watch. I thought, you know, every rider out there basically by themselves doing one fast lap. It seemed like the rider who went last had maybe a bit of an advantage, but of course the rider who went last was Shane Shaky Byrne, so he probably would have gotten pole regardless. On pole on that Ducati, quite a big achievement, that Ducati coming good now. He was ahead of Leon Haslam and Dan Linfoot on the front row. Then Jason O'Halloran led the second row ahead of Peter Hickman, Danny Buchan. Then on the third row was Brock Parks, who stepped in for John Hopkins, who's injured. Christian Idden, who was missing the tip of one of his fingers. Whatever you do, do not go to Christian Idden's Twitter, because he posted a photo of what his finger looks like, and it is horrifying. So do not go there. And then Richard Cooper, he rounded out the top nine on the BMW build base machine.
Race one, flipping heck.
It was great.
It was carnage. It was really dramatic.
Those first two laps were great. It seemed like people were allergic to finishing the race.
We had 10 DNFs. But what we did see was suddenly the cameras went, hang on, who's that going across the grass? It's Shane Byrne. And Shaky had left. Now, the BSB rules, for those who aren't aware, if your bike goes down, you do not remount. You are banned. You are not allowed to get back on the bike.
Yeah.
You just have to walk away, and that's your race finish. And it's because of the problems they've had in the past with oil being dropped and everything. So, but he managed to keep it upright, rejoined in 14th, was it?
I think even lower than that. He rejoined way down the order.
Yeah. He was way, way down. And then just started chewing into people. And ended up third. It's like, wow.
Really, great ride.
But what was brilliant was Jason O'Halloran and Dan Linfoot, neither of whom have ever won a race before.
Oh, yeah.
Battling at the front. And this was proper ding-dong. Tommy Hill and John Hopkins, or, you know, Lorenzo and Rossi, or whoever. You know, it was just...
Yeah, it was really, really great. And it came down to the last lap. You know, Jason O'Halloran was following, waiting, looking around for Linfoot. And then Linfoot had probably the biggest slide I've ever seen, maybe ever, certainly on a superbike. He slid with both wheels so loud that the trackside TV cameras picked it up. And he somehow managed to save it. But, you know, there's photos all over Twitter of just... Dan Linfoot's Honda in the most disgusting of shape. Like, it's impossible to even describe. But unfortunately, that demoted Linfoot to second and did allow Jason O'Halloran to just nip ahead. So the Australian did get his first ever BSB win.
And he gave a really good interview afterwards as well. And he was just saying, you know, it was great. He said, look, I don't think I'd have got past if Dan hadn't had the slide. But he did. And if he hadn't, then... Whatever was, he said, it's all I could do, so I'm really chuffed, he said. But so I'm going to have a word with him in a minute and see how he's feeling. Probably hasn't calmed down yet. I mean,
and it's happened to Dan Linfoot a couple of times that he's been in the lead of the race or in a position to win, and then he's either had a huge moment like this or just straight out crashed. So it's clear that Linfoot has the speed to win, and it's also clear that both of those Hondas aren't bad bikes under the BSB rules. You know, they're probably not going to be challenging for victories every race, but there's still some life in the old Fireblade yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Billy McConnell came in fourth behind Shaky Byrne a few seconds back. Then Leon Haslam, fifth. I don't know if Leon doesn't get on with Snedeker.
He had some big problems with tyre life. They'd had small issues throughout the weekend, which had meant that Leon Haslam basically had never done a full race run. So the team went into the race sort of just shrugging their shoulders and going, maybe this will work.
Yeah. And then there was a little group behind him of Jake Dixon, Luke Moss, and Tommy Brivewell, who finished in that order, who they had been cutting back to when they could. And they were having a really good battle. Then Stuart Easton, Lee Jackson, Jakob Smerts was 11th, Danny Buchan 12th, James Rispoli was 13th, Alistair Seeley 14th, and Philip Backlund 15th, rounding out the points. I mean, you look at some of the DNFs, Richie Chiannari, three-time...
We'll talk about Chiannari in a little more depth after the second race, because I have some words for Mr. Chiannari. But James Ellison and Richard Cooper, they got super unlucky, as did Brock Parks at the first really tight hairpin. James Ellison has taken over from Ben Spies as being the unluckiest rider in the world, because it seems like this year Ellison just can't get a break in BSB. Michael Laverty and Peter Hickman, they're also pretty unlucky. Glenn Irwin had slowed down because he was having an issue with his bike. And so then Peter Hickman clipped to the back of his Ducati. And then because Hickman was crashing, Michael Laverty crashed, and they were all pretty unlucky as well. Jenny Tinmouth, she had a pretty unfortunate crash, but compared to what would come in race two, it was a pretty small one.
Yeah, pretty benign.
Yep.
We lost Josh Hook as well. And then race two got underway. And, again, we had Brock Parks and Josh Hook first lap went down. And it wasn't as attritional.
No.
But we had Shane Byrne. This time, Jason O'Halloran couldn't really stay with the leading group after the first few laps. But Dan Linfoot, he was up there again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing having watched him over the last few seasons. I remember him when he went to World Super Sport and did a wildcard race and having a right dust up with Keenan Sofuoglu. And I think Keenan knocked him off at some stage and he remounted. You know, but thinking, wow, this kid's got some real promise. And he's there or thereabouts season after season in BSP, and he still hasn't won a race, which I found incredible.
Yeah, hopefully it'll come soon for him because, you know, as I said before, he clearly has the speed. You know, he was able to follow Shaky Byrne, and both of them were, what, 3 seconds ahead of the guys fighting for third. So, you know, he clearly has the pace. Then just behind them, Michael Laverty, he'd eventually crossed the line in third, ahead of Haslam again, Haslam having some big tyre problems. Half a second back on them was Jason O'Halloran. Then Christian Iden with his half a finger was sixth, ahead of Glenn Irwin. Glenn Irwin, after a pretty disastrous start to the season, Glenn Irwin's really, really gotten strong on that Ducati and is really starting to show some good form. So good to see him in seventh place, ahead of Peter Hickman, Danny Buchan, Tommy Bride. Tommy Bridewell was in. Okay, we're going to talk about Riccio Chiarnari now. So in race one, Riccio Chiarnari DNF'd. I don't know if he crashed or I don't know what the fuck Chiarnari did.
No, I didn't hear it mentioned, to be honest.
No, in all honesty, I had forgotten that Riccio Chiarnari was even still racing in BSB. I'm not even being funny. Yeah. Like, it wasn't until I started to do some prep for MotoPod that was like, oh shit, Chiarnari was racing. But anyway, so in race one, Tommy Bridewell got eighth. In race two, Tommy Bridewell, less crashes, Tommy Bridewell got 10th. As we said, Riccio Chiarnari DNF'd in race one, whatever happened to him. In race two, Riccio Chiarnari, as you said earlier, Martin, three-time BSB champion, Honda golden boy for however many years, you know, one of the kings of the Suzuka 8-hour. Riccio Chiarnari was 20th behind James Rispoli. So
there's no need to say it like that. What's wrong with James Rispoli?
He's a rookie. He's still learning his way. Riccio Chiarnari, it honestly seems like he's not trying in BSB, because then today at the Suzuka 8-hour test, where he's also on a Suzuki, I'm sure he's with Dunlop tyres there, but Riccio Chiarnari at the Suzuka 8-hour test was the fourth or fifth fastest rider. And that's compared to guys like Nakasuga and like Watanabe, who literally all they do is lap Suzuka. So it seems like Chiarnari is not trying in BSB, and I can't see him lasting too long, because a three-time champion in 20th, when his teammate is in the top 10. Now, don't get me wrong. Tommy Bridewell, he's a decent rider, right? Like, I think he's won a couple of races, but, you know, if I know nothing about motorcycle racing and you show me Tommy Bridewell stats and Riccio Chiarnari stats, you're obviously going to go, oh, Chiarnari's probably going to finish higher in the season, right? But no, he's just literally doing nothing, and I cannot understand. Riccio Chiarnari is obviously famous for his inconsistency, but 2016, he seems to have turned whatever thing he has, laziness or whatever it is, up to 11, because it's honestly comical.
Yeah, he had bipolar talent, didn't
he? Yeah.
If everything was right, and I was at Donington for a World Superbike race back in the day when he was at World Superbikes, when he was on the
hands-free
Tank Carter in the wet, and he won a race, and he was just sideways everywhere.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Do you remember the Monza race where you had it was Kagami, Norihaga. It was the three Japanese abreast going round the Parabolica at Monza. And it was, I think it was the three Japanese, or it certainly Norihaga and Kiyonari. It might have been Bayliss in between them. I can't remember. And it was like, and he took them around the outside. You're thinking, what? Jesus, kid's good. And then he'd have a season of nothing. And then he'd have a season, he'd win the BSB Championship. Then he'd have a season of nothing. Like you say, he's no longer bipolar talent. He's now very much South Pole only.
Yeah, like...
Not implying, Harry, that the Southern Hemisphere is any...
Okay. We said we were avoiding the politics this episode.
Yeah. Jenny Timoth, bless her. Thank goodness she walked away from a crash which saw her bike cartwheel in and around where she was sliding. Mm. And thank goodness she didn't contact her. And then, bless her, she ran back out on the track to pick bits of her bike up so they wouldn't hit anyone else. James Whitton was getting quite concerned. He was like, you need to get off track, love. There's bikes coming, right?
Yeah.
She was okay, and she walked away. She looked fine, but...
Lost
the front going into one of the chicanes at the fast chicane, slightly uphill, and the bike just flipped and blinking heck went. It really did.
Yeah, really, really scary. So good to see her walk away.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the championship standings... Shane Byrne retakes the lead from Leon Hansen, but only by 4 points, so virtually nothing. But then, of course, remember, it's not meaningless at all. But at the moment, as Byrne, Haslam, O'Halloran, Linford, Iden, and Cooper are going into the showdown, which is several rounds away from it still.
Yes.
Michael Laverty's only 8 points behind Richard Cooper, so this can all change, and in 1 point behind him is James Ellison. But the podium points, when you get to the last three rounds, which is actually seven races, because one of them's a three-race meeting, I believe.
Yeah, brands or something.
The podium points, you get 3 for a win, 2 for a second, 1 for a third.
It's 5-3-1 now, I think. They changed it again.
5 for a win, 3 for a second, 1 for a third. And you will, and that's then added to everyone, all the six in the showdown get 500 points. Added to which is their podium points, and then they fight out the last races. So I'm not a fan, but it seems to be working-ish.
I mean, it is what it is, right? As fans, there's not really much we can do about it.
Well, what we can do, which we do every year, and so far the only year that's made a difference was the Hill Hopkins 6,000th of a second separating them one. So I think if it hadn't been for the showdown, I do think Hopper would have been the champion that year.
Well, I thought it was when Shaky and Lowe's went for the championship, wasn't it? Or was that...
Was Shaky and Lowe's? Right. No, it might have been. That was another race.
We'll have to ask Dave because he's the BSB expert. But yeah, there was definitely only been one season where it's actually made a difference. So.
Yeah. But when we get to the showdown, we'll keep telling you what the points would have been had it been having on. Now, speaking of Dave, Jordan Weaving, who Dave is mentoring, came second in the Superstock 600, which is really good. Josh Elliott in the Superstock 1000, and Dave does his PR. Yes. Josh finished fifth, but got an 11-position penalty, which dropped 16th for careless riding. So we will speak to Dave.
Yeah, so I watched the race, so I can speak on it a bit.
Oh, you've seen
Yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I sat inside all day and watched all of the BSB support races because I've nothing else to do with my life. So at the previous round, Josh Elliott and Taylor McKenzie, they'd had a bit of a run-in on track, and Taylor McKenzie got a penalty for careless riding. So then in this race, it was again at that hairpin. I think it's like turn two, maybe it's turn one. So Josh Elliott came speeding into that corner and collected Taylor McKenzie, taking McKenzie out of the race. So that's the incident that got Elliott.
But Josh stayed upright and finished fifth.
Josh rallied and finished fifth. Ian Hutchinson won the race. Ian Hutchinson, great to see him win a short circuit race. But anyway, that's a sidetrack. So Josh Elliott... He hit a false neutral, and that's why he'd come in, and it was just bad luck that Taylor McKenzie was there. But obviously with their history from the previous round, it wasn't the best look. And then as Taylor McKenzie was coming back into the pits, one of the Eurosport cameras found him, and he said, if he wants war, he will get war. So I think that the stock 1000 BSB class could be very exciting at the next round, because Taylor McKenzie seems a bit of a nut job.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd imagine Neil's probably quite a tenacious little fighter as well. So if he gets his dad involved,
yes.
I don't know what Josh's parents are like. I know he's got a very pretty sister, and his potential brother-in-law is Gino Rea. And Gino's an Italian cockney, so he probably knows some friends are quite. So yeah, it could be a massive, massive punch-up in Superstock Thou coming to a track near you soon.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, if you don't usually watch Superstock Thou at BSB, maybe watch it for the next round.
Yeah. Now we're going to hop back across the pond because Moto America were running at Laguna Seca alongside World Superbikes. Mm. And the wins were shared by the Monster Energy Graves Yamaha team. Cameron Beaubier took the first race. Tony Elias was second. Josh Hayes was third. Cameron's teammate, Josh Herrin, Matthew Schultz, Danny Eslick, Claudio Cort, Bobby Fong, Sheridan Morais was ninth, Jake Lewis 10th, so on and so forth. And then in race two, it was Josh Hayes from Cameron Beaubier. So on aggregate scores, Cameron picked up a few points more. Tony Lewis was third this time. So the same three guys on the podium each time. Roger Hayden was fourth, Claudio Corti 5th, so on and so forth down. Which means in the title race, Cameron Beaubier is 29 points clear of Josh Hayes. And there's only one round left, which I think is New Jersey.
Yes, I believe
so. I think
so.
It's New Jersey, isn't it? Yeah. Tony Lewis is third and 35 points behind Cameron Beaubier. So, you know, they're all still in. Roger Hayden's fourth, 59, so he can't catch up.
No, unfortunately.
But it's still up for it. Cameron Beaubier would need to have some fairly bad luck.
Yes.
Which is also what anyone hoping to win the MotoPod MCN Fantasy
League.
Oh
God, we still do this thing? I should probably change my team.
everyone else needs to step Craig Lowe, because you remember a couple of weeks ago there was like 6 points between the top three, and then there was 9 points. Craig Lowe is now 101 points clear in the lead.
Woo-wee.
Now bear in mind, we had four scoring races this weekend.
Yeah, big weekend.
Shothole Racing, CLLFC, Craig Lowe, our Cockney Liverpool fan, with £600,000 free in his budget. Now, Craig, unfortunately, by the time I looked at his team out of interest, he's clearly changed it. He's used his transfers. He's got none left for the next race. So I'll be interested to see who he had. But he's got 1,894. In second place on 793 is Ben Fetterplace with his team BF8. And then Nibby's Knee Sliders, Stuart Nibbs, is third, 30 points behind Ben, and he's on 1,763.
That's a lot of points. All three of them have a lot of points.
Craig, who buys Dave coffee at BSB, he's a friend of the show. We all banter with him. It's not a fix, honestly. Just because we know Craig, it's not a fix. But no, well done to Craig. What I did forget to do, actually, and if we get a minute, I might do shortly, is see where he is in the overall standings.
Okay. Well, but, I will run down the hosts league while you quickly go and check the overall standings, because unfortunately I think that you would be too smug about the current host standings, because it is of course Martin Darlington who does lead the way with Huge Ass Racing, 1,504 points, 25th overall, and what's that, some 390 points exactly behind good friend Craig Lowe. Then Scott Bolton is, what's that, that's just under 400 points back on Martin, so Martin has a very, very healthy lead in this host championship, unfortunately.
I'm just going to interrupt you there.
Okay.
Craig is sixth.
Wow, holy shit.
Just 20,000 people are doing this.
Jesus.
League. Well, 19,958 people. Craig is sixth overall. Do you know what? I mean, a few years ago, one of our listeners, and I'm trying, Toby, someone, won a motorcycle. Unfortunately, I think the price of winning now is VIP tickets to a round of BSB or something. it went from an R1 to an R6 to a YZF-R125 to a pair of
tyres. Set of tyres,
wasn't it? Yeah. Now it's a ticket to your local cinema or something. I don't know. You were saying, where did you get to?
Scott Bolton. I was just saying that you have a pretty comfortable lead and are probably going to win this damn host league.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness we all said we'd put £100 in each and the winner picked up. I'm sure I remember that somewhere.
Yeah, it's in the back of my memory somewhere as well. But I'm in third with 1,035 points. So what's that, 72 points back on?
Yeah, that's really the only closable gap, because Dave is 202 points behind you with 833 in 140th place. Len has actually climbed. Len's climbed four places to 179th with 593. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how Len manages to actually register a team, because after that, he seems to lose all knowledge of what to do with it.
I think that much like me, Len has maybe forgotten to make a couple of transfers. I think that I made some transfers in the first few rounds of the year, but as certain life events have come up, my memory for transferring riders has just absolutely collapsed, and I still have Chaz Davies as my team captain. So Laguna Seca was a bit of a disastrous weekend for us.
Well, actually, I swapped out Tom Sykes for Chaz Davies.
Mug.
That was a big mistake, and I made Chaz the captain, and I really should have stuck with Thomas. It was all based on last year, you know, when Chaz did the double. So.
Yep. The one thing that you can guarantee about motorcycle racing is that it's unpredictable, and that is why we love it so much. The one thing that is predictable is that the MotoGP World Championship will be back in action this weekend at the Saxon Ring, MotoGP's shortest circuit. It will be a big test for Michelin. Obviously, seven left-hand corners, followed by that famous right-hand corner. It's going to be a bit scary the first time those guys do a flying lap down the waterfall, because, you know, we saw in the Bridgestone era, there were some big fucking crashes there.
Yeah, I remember Hector Barbera going off there at horrendous speed, and him sliding down that hill didn't seem to be any slower than when he was on his bike. I mean, it was... just thinking, Jesus. But in homage to our founder, our founding father, Bob Hayes, we have to call it Der Sachsen Ring. I know if you listened when Bob used to talk about, and he'd say, it was a great race at Essen, and next we're going to Der Sachsen Ring. You think, bloody hell, where did that come from? And interestingly, World Superbikes, when they come back, not till the 17th and 18th of September.
So about 8 years.
Yeah. They're at the Lausitzring, also in Germany, which will be another new track. So they didn't go there last year, did they?
No, they haven't been there since like 2008 or something. I think that Norrie Hart was the last winner, which says a lot. So we have about 8 years until World Superbikes is back. Obviously, MotoGP this weekend, which is always a grand little day out. Then BSB, they go to Thruxton on the 22nd to 24th of July. So there will be a fair bit of racing for you there. And then as for Moto America, they have a similarly large gap to World Superbikes. And they're actually back the weekend before World Superbikes from the 9th to 11th of September.
Yeah, at New Jersey Motorsports Park.
Yes, and obviously after the Saxon Ring, we do also have the summer break. We may take 1 or 2 weeks off Motopod. Next week, I have a bit of an announcement to make, so be sure to tune in to next week's Motopod, because this announcement is set to rock the motorcycling world. Probably not, but, you know. But yeah, we'll try and do some shows. There's definitely 1 or 2 things. You know, as we said, there's 1 or 2 chats we want to try and get during said off season. But we may revert it to a bi-weekly show, because I'm gonna guess that the news is gonna be pretty fucking slow.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably do a preview show for the Austrian Grand Prix, the Red Bull Ring. Yeah. We haven't been there before. We, as in MotoGP, Formula One goes there, but who gives a shit? 4 wheels go round corners, boring.
And only 9 corners.
Yeah, 9 corners.
Tricky to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still think they should go to Cadwell Park MotoGP. I think it'd be hilarious.
It would certainly be a sight.
What could possibly go wrong? But I think that's us. I think we're done.
Yeah.
I think we now need to wrap this up. Say thank you to everyone, especially our donators and subscribers, and also to the riders who bring us so much pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, all of these guys and girls, they go out there, they put their bodies on the line purely for our entertainment. And yeah, we probably should thank all of the riders, big and small, a bit more for what they do for us.
And I always think when people hear us criticizing them, you know, Harry and I are not bike racers.
No.
You know, we ride motorcycles, but we are not racers. We're fans, and we are self-appointed nonsense purveyors and pundits.
I'm getting that on my business card.
Yeah. but I do think it's always worth remembering that, for example, if I went on a track day, even when I was back in my regular track daying and I was in the fast group, and you know, I only had an R6, so I was never top half of the fast group. But you know, I could remain reasonably safe. If I'd seen Jenny Tinmouth there, who you know is sort of normally the lower half of the BSB finishers, she would rip holes in any amateur fast group rider you care to name.
Yes, her.
You know, even she, you know,
probably quicker than most fast track day riders flying lap.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we were commenting on Ricci Schiannari, and the only reason we do with such criticism is because the heights that from which he's fallen, he's still a shit sight faster than I am sat on my sofa. So I do acknowledge that, because I sometimes when I hear, you know, I don't know, Julian Ryder for an example, really laying into a ride, and I'm thinking, well, hang on a sec. And I think, hang on, what a stupid thing to say to myself, which I was about to say, he's quicker than you are. Well, of course he is. Julian Ryder's a 50-something commentator. He's a journalist.
Yeah.
That's not his job. So he's doing his job. Ryder's doing their job. You know, and I've got huge respect for all of them as riders, not necessarily all of them as human beings, but that's obviously because they're human beings. But yeah, I just think it's worth remembering sometimes. Flipping heck, these are still the best of the best of the best.
Yeah, exactly. That's the big thing to remember, is that even the slowest rider in BSB and Moto America is still a million times faster than 99% of the population.
Oh, I don't know about Moto America. I was talking about BSB and World Motocross.
Let's time to end this show. We don't need any more angry emails.
Harry, if you want to edit that out, that's fine. I didn't even mention cheese.
No, I will. I'll leave it in, but I will be saying goodbye now, because I need to go have an ice cream sandwich, because it's very, very hot in my apartment, because I'm too cheap to turn on the air conditioning. So I'll catch everyone next week after their German GP.
Der Sachsenring. Auf Wiedersehen. Alles. Tschüss.
Bye.